Earth Sky.
Welcome to Earth Sky 22, 22 minutes of science and music. I'm Michael Brennan. This week, Deborah Bird is here to talk about Comet Pan-STARRS, which should become visible in the Northern Hemisphere around March 7th and 8th. Plus, the world's quietest room, and music from 100 Visions and Aram Ray. Here's your scientist soundbite.
The Earth and the comet will be closest on March 5th of 2013. The comet will be closest to the sun on March 10th of 2013. And it's usually around the time that the comet is closest to the sun that it's at its brightest and most active. So beginning in early March, we should really start getting some good views of this comet.
That was skywatching expert Deborah Bird. More with her in a few, but first, science news of the week. March 13th will mark the inauguration of the ALMA telescope in northern Chile. Earth Sky's Emily Howard and Martha Morales will be making the trek down and covering the event live. For coverage of the event, visit earthsky.org. A new study of women's feet during and after pregnancy shows that arch height and arch rigidity decrease significantly from early pregnancy to 5 months after childbirth, causing corresponding increases in foot length that appear to be permanent. The new study was published in the March issue of the American Journal of Physical Medicine and Rehabilitation. Since their discovery over 50 years ago, Earth's Van Allen radiation belts have been considered to consist of two distinct zones of trapped, highly energetic, charged particles. Observations from NASA's Van Allen probes recently revealed an isolated third ring in the outer radiation belt. For a cool video depicting the Van Allen belts, visit EarthSky. A report from the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, released in February 2013, has some good news. It found that the no-take protections in the Tortugas Marine Reserve, located off the Florida Keys, are working as intended. Studies show these methods are starting to benefit populations of overexploited reef fish, such as grouper and snapper. Since the reserve was established in 2001, scientists have observed that some reef fish are increasing in size and abundance within the protected area. The report did not find evidence that commercial or recreational fisheries have experienced any major economic losses due to the creation of the reserve. And that's Science News of the Week. Song of the Week is Last Cab from Tunis by 100 Visions. listening to EarthSky 22, 22 minutes of science and music from Austin, Texas. Deborah Bird is here to talk about two comets to look out for in 2013. Welcome, Deborah.
Hi, Mike. Two comets. Wow, it's even a great thing if we have one comet, but 2013 actually has two comets.
Cool. So what can we look out for?
Well, the first one, this comet is called Comet Pan-STARRS, and it's named for the Pan-STARRS telescope, which is in Hawaii, because comets are named for their discoverers, and in this case, that's a piece of equipment. So this comet has been visible to astronomers with professional telescopes since June of 2011. That's when it was discovered.
Oh, okay. So it's new.
Actually, this comet is thought to have been traveling toward the inner solar system for millions of years.
Wow.
So it's a first-time visitor to our part of the solar system. There's thought to be this great comet cloud surrounding the solar system, and occasionally comets get dislodged from this cloud, and they cruise in toward the inner solar system and sometimes put on a good show. And that may be the case here with Comet Pan-STARRS. So the reason that people think that it may be a good, bright comet is that now the observations of it are showing that it is actually kind of bright for the distance that it's at. So along about October of 2012, people began to be able to see its coma, which is like this envelope of gases and dust and ice surrounding the comet as they come in close to the sun. This stuff starts coming off the comet. And they began to see that coma, and it was kind of a big one, kind of a big, large coma. So, you know, as this comet gets closer and closer to the sun, it may get brighter and brighter. It will get brighter and brighter. So the question is, how bright will it get? Will it get bright enough to be viewed with the eye? Because, of course, there are comets passing by us all the time. We just don't see them. So maybe once every 10 years or something like that, there'll be a really great comet that everybody can see. And maybe Comet Pan-STARRS will be the first of those comets in the year 2013.
Yeah. So I assume astronomers know that it's going to come close, but not close enough to be an unfriendly encounter?
Exactly. It's going to come close, but not that close.
Okay.
So no danger from Comet Pan-STARRS. Actually, the Earth and the comet will be closest on March 5th of 2013. The comet will be closest to the sun on March 10th of 2013. And it's usually around the time that the comet is closest to the sun that it's at its brightest and most active. So beginning in early March, we should really start getting some good views of this comet. It'll go around the sun on March 10th, and then it'll start heading back out to the outer solar system again. But by then, it may have developed this long, you know, characteristic comet tail that you think of when you think of a comet.
Mm-hmm.
So we may be able to see that in our sky. And it should, you know, last through March and into April.
And can you tell us what we're looking for when we look up in the sky for a comet?
Yeah, and a lot of people mistake comets and meteors. They mix those two things up.
Mm-hmm.
So meteors are shooting stars. They're streaks across the sky,
right,
and they last just a few seconds. Sometimes they sort of leave this vapor trail behind them that may last, you know, a bit longer. Comets aren't like that. Comets are much more stately, slow-moving objects. You don't look up in the sky and see a comet actually moving across the sky. It is moving across the sky over a period of weeks and months, and even years.
Mm-hmm.
But as we stand there on Earth and look at a comet, we don't see it move. But what we do see is this fuzzy object, sometimes with a long comet tail. And that tail on certain comets can cover, you know, a huge expanse of sky. It can cover half the sky. It can cover a huge area of sky.
Wow.
I mean, I've never seen one myself. And in my lifetime, there hasn't been a comet like that. But in history, there have been comets like that. So the second comet, which is called Comet Ison, it's named for a network of telescopic facilities in Russia.
Mm-hmm.
Comet Ison, people are saying, could become one of those legendary comets. It could become, you know, one of those comets that has this amazing long comet tail. People are saying it might even be visible in daylight.
Wow.
People are calling it possibly the comet of the century.
Okay, so how can we see Ison, and when will we be able to see it?
Well, so Ison was discovered really recently. It was discovered in September of 2012. And so it's just coming in now from the outer solar system, the same way that the first comet was, just, you know, coming closer and closer to the sun. Because these comets are actually solar system objects. They're bound in orbit by the sun in the same way that Earth is, but their orbits are much more elongated than the orbit of Earth. So this comet has just been cruising in toward the inner solar system. We should begin to see it possibly in October of 2013, so we're going to have to wait longer for this one than we are for Pan-STARRS, which is visible in March of 2013. This one, not probably until October of 2013, will it become actually visible to the eye. And it'll be passing some bright objects in our sky then. It'll be passing the bright star Regulus and the constellation Leo, and it'll also be passing the planet Mars in October of 2013. So you may need those brighter objects to pick out the comet. It won't be that spectacular in October 2013, but it's still coming closer, closer, closer to the sun. In November, it'll be getting, you know, probably bright enough to start seeing it. It's still going to be passing some other bright objects. It'll go past the star Spica in the constellation Virgo. It'll go past the planet Saturn. So all of these will be great photo opportunities for people who want to take pictures of the sky. The comet will be going around the sun, closest to the sun, in late November, November 28th. And it's at that point, people are saying that it may be very, very bright indeed. It may be as bright as a full moon. So if that happens, we will see the comet in daylight. It will be visible in daylight.
Wow.
The trick is, there's always a catch, right? And the catch here is that at that point, the comet's going to be very close to the sun. So it'll be a challenging observation to see that very bright comet right next to the sun. And in fact, you might need some special equipment to see that. Mm-hmm. So that'll be a good time to get in touch with your local nature center or your local group of amateur astronomers, who I'm sure will be organizing comet viewing parties for people to tell them how to look for the comet when it's at its brightest and closest to the sun. But then comes the month of December 2013, when all of us, with just our eyes, should be able to see the comet. It won't be in the daylight sky then. It won't be at its brightest because it'll already have rounded the sun and it'll be heading back out to the outer solar system. But it'll be a very bright comet. It should have a long comet tail at that point, and it should be a spectacular sight.
And I'm sure we'll talk more about that in November and December.
Yeah, we'll talk more about it. And I just want to say one thing more about comets, and that is, you know, these two comets could dazzle us or they could totally fizzle, because comets do that. In fact, there's a great quote from the famous comet hunter David Levy, who said, comets are like cats. They have tails and they do exactly what they want.
Yeah. I like the odds, two comets in one year.
Yeah, it's fantastic. I mean, I can't remember when we had two comets in one year at the beginning of the year that we knew that there were two comets coming like this. So it's very, very special.
So when these comets come close to the sun, sometimes they can create a meteor shower. They warm and they create a trail of debris, right?
Yeah, that's right. In fact, the annual meteor showers that we all love so much, the Perseids and the Geminids and the Orionids and those wonderful meteor showers, those are debris left behind by comets. So this comet Ison, in fact, we're going to be passing through its orbit. It won't be there when we pass through the orbit. The comet will be long gone. Mm-hmm. But it may have left some debris behind, and we may pass through that debris left by Comet Ison. So that's going to happen in January of 2014.
Okay, well, 2013, exciting year for comets.
That's right. Thank you, Mike.
Thank you. Earth Sky's Deborah Bird.
Earth Sky broadcast on over 1,200 stations worldwide, including Voice of America. Many of us wish we had more quiet and solitude in our lives. In today's Weird Science, Ryan Britton is here to share how absolute quiet can affect us in weird ways.
Absolute quiet can actually drive you crazy.
Okay, how's that?
Well, to back up for a second, this story is about the anechoic chamber at Orfield Laboratories in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Now, anechoic means without echo. So this room is designed to absorb sound, and it does a very good job of it. In fact, it is in the Guinness Book of World Records as the world's quietest place. This chamber is designed to absorb 99.99% of all sound. It has sound insulation that's over a meter thick, plus two insulated steel walls, followed by a thick concrete wall that's close to a third of a meter thick.
Wow.
Yeah, and all of this material is to make sure that no sound outside gets in, and that all the sound inside is absorbed.
It sounds kind of like a black hole of sound. Ryan, so this sound deprivation drives people crazy. What's happening?
We humans are used to having ambient noise around us. In other words, sound is normally all around us, even when it's quiet. So when there isn't any sound, our bodies become the sound. Without sound around us, we start to hear our breathing, our heartbeat, our swallowing. It's reported as being very, very strange. And also our ears, we use them to orient ourselves. So our hearing even aids us in standing upright. When sound is taken away, it's very disconcerting. People can get dizzy or, you know, have problems standing up. People who stay in the chamber are actually asked to sit down or lie down. In fact, the longest anybody has ever been in the chamber is 45 minutes.
Scary, yeah. I guess. So why have a place like this?
Well, besides going in to have hallucinations, which have been reported, it's also used for product testing. Manufacturers and companies rent the space to measure sound and vibration. I'd like to go experience it myself, see what my, I have a case of tinnitus, and from a life of rock concerts, I wonder what that sounds like in there.
I imagine it would sound loud, even though there's no sound.
Probably.
So where can people find out more about this anechoic chamber?
Yeah, anechoic chamber. There's a great tour of the space on YouTube, and you just search for Orfield, O-R-F-I-E-L-D, Labs. And they also, Orfield Labs has a site with a tour. There's also finally a good article on the chamber at IndianExpress.com.
That was Earth Sky's Ryan Britton and Jorge Salazar. And that's our show. Thanks for listening. This week's show was recorded in Earth Sky Studio in Austin, Texas, live music capital of the world. Special thanks to our musical contributors, 100 Visions, The Black and White Years, Sleep Good, 100 Flowers, and to take us out this week, we've got a new song from Aram Ray. It's off her new album, Waving Wild. For more on the science or the music you heard this week, visit earthsky.org. I'm Michael Brennan. Earth Sky is a clear voice for science.